Good evening, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of The Bog right here on Dave Martell YouTube channel. If you like The Bog, you support The Bog, make sure you go sign up at patreon.com/TheBog and you can get a sticker, you can get a mug, but most importantly, you can get an RSS feed to get audio of every single show that we do to listen to in your car, on your commutes, at the gym, or at work. That is patreon.com/TheBog. Help us keep the lights on. You want to support us another way, make sure you go to shop.spreadshirt.com/BogShop. There's all kinds of sweet merch over there. Bog logos on it. So, winter's here, guys. It's freezing outside if you're up in the Northeast. If you're from the Beast Coast like me. So go get yourself a sweet Bog hoodie. There's beanies, all kinds of stuff. Dresses for the ladies, onesies for the babies. Over there at shop.spreadshirt.com/BogShop. If you want to support a friend of ours, make sure you go to facebook.com/IronAgeJodish and check out some authentic, ancient, Vedic astrology. This stuff is super cool, dude. I'm telling you guys are going to love it. So go give them a like. And if you check them out, you decide to get a reading like I got, what Tristan got, and all of us got, then make sure to tell them that Big Dave sent you over there. Facebook.com/IronAgeJodish. Guys, Bizarre Archives, Weird Tales of Monsters, Magic, and Machines, Issue 2 has been out. It's crushing it. It's crushing it. So if you guys have not gotten your copy yet today, make sure you go get one. We're working on issue 3 already. It's going to be coming out in a few months. And on top of that, we have a very special reprint from the golden era of science fiction coming out. An absolute legend of an author coming out, reprint for the first time in this century. So make sure you go get yourself a copy of the Bizarre Archives, Weird Tales of Monsters, Magic, and Machine 1, 2, and then also a cosmic horror double feature for all of the fans of the Lovecraftian tradition. That is over on the bizarrearchives.com. Speaking of the Lovecraftian tradition, I have a very special guest with me this evening, a guy, one of my favorite YouTubers, one of my favorite YouTube channels, the Damien from the Arkham Reporter. How we doing, sir?
Hey, man. Thanks for having me on your show. Yeah, I'm doing great.
Excellent. So, Damien has a really cool channel over there, the Arkham Reporter, and he goes through and he talks all things Lovecraft. This guy's knowledge about Lovecraft and the deep lore of the mythos and all this kind of stuff is some of the best out there. He does some really, really great stuff. He also does some adjacent commentary going after some of the weirdos and the scumbags that kind of try to sneak in and slither into our beloved tradition yeah. of cosmic horror. And he's just some of his videos are really funny. A lot of them are really informative, and he's just a really cool guy. Really, really good content over there. So, Mr. Damien, how long have you been doing the Arkham Reporter, which is a great name, by the way?
Oh, thank you. I've been doing it since I checked recently. It was about 6 years, so YouTube tells me.
Been cooking for a little while now. And what is I think your biggest video, which is the video that I caught you on when I first subscribed to you, was like Introduction to Lovecraft or something like that, right?
Yeah, it's not actually my biggest video. It's one of my more successful ones. The biggest one I did was all about the Necronomicon. That one reached, I think, now it's like 600,000 views or something like that.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't know how it happened, but that one took off for some reason.
Yeah, I subbed you a couple years ago when you, like I said, I caught onto that. And, you know, like I do with YouTube, I watch sparsely when I'm in the mood for some Lovecraft. I would click on your stuff. And then pretty recently, one of the Bizarre Archives readers reached out to me and he sent me a thing. He said, "Yo, Arkham Reporter just brought up Bizarre Archives on his video." And I was like, "No way." So I clicked on it. And I was like super pumped because I really like your stuff. And I was like shouting from the hill. All the Bizarre Archives authors, all the guys were like real. Because like, you know, obviously, if you're into Lovecraft and like the greater mythos and stuff, you're going to be following, you know, your content. You're one of the bigger guys out there. So they were like all excited too. But what made you get into a Lovecraft as a whole? Because it's not really something that you learn about. Like for me, I just like stumbled upon it. You know, everybody's heard my story about how I just like found it looking for something else. How did you discover Lovecraft, especially since you're somebody from abroad? You're not in America.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. like a lot of people, I think like everyone stumbles upon Lovecraft. You don't find Lovecraft, he finds you. So I was about like 17 or 16. I was in South Africa, a student in high school. And then I was always a big reader, always. And then I went to like this secondhand paperback bookstore. I found this dodgy looking book called Prey by Graham Masterton, I think was the writer. And it was a very, very loose adaptation of the Dreams in the Witch House. And I remember, okay, it was a standard slasher type thing with some time travel. And then one of the creatures in there was called Brown Jenkin. I was thinking, what kind of name for that? What is that for a character? And then later on they mentioned Yogg-Sothoth. I was just thinking, you know, I'm so used to the Draculas and the Wolfmen and all this sort of stuff and werewolves. And I just Yogg-Sothoth, how? What is this? And then I looked it up on the internet, and then yeah, that's how I discovered Lovecraft, and pretty much been into him. Yeah, when I came to Switzerland after my university, high school and such, I found a big anthology, and since then, I started, I think, the channel shortly after that.
That's really cool. And do you have like, is there any Lovecraft works that stand out to you as like this was the one that really hooked me?
Yeah, for sure. For me, it would have been one of the first ones that I read, which is also one of the first ones he made, was The Outsider. I think a lot of people, I don't want to sound like an edgelord or something, but it really spoke to me. I don't think I've always fitted in so well in many aspects of life and such, you know. So I understood what Lovecraft was getting at, and I was just like, wow, with so few words, he really encapsulates a good feeling there. And also Dagon,
Oh, yeah.
which is like a primordial version or a very short version of Call of Cthulhu. That one was also one of his earliest stories, and these were the first stories because I always read the book in chronological order. And that really popped for me. And then finally it was The Shadow of Innsmouth. Everything about the mythos, it just came together, and I was like, wow, this guy's really onto something here. So yeah, those were really the key stories for me.
Yeah, I had a similar experience. I don't know if you've ever if I told you about this or you watched any of my videos that talked about this, but not to give the full version, but when I was a kid, I used to like there was a series that was out here in the States. You guys might have had it. It was called Goosebumps. It was like for kids. It was like horror, like
I was addicted to those as well,
Oh, you
pretty
were?
much.
Okay.
Yeah, I had pretty much all of them, I think, like literally all of them.
I you know what? I still have like a big stack of them somewhere. And do you know what? For being kids horror, they actually aren't so bad. I actually cracked a couple open and read them as an adult sort of recently. And I was like, you know what? This wasn't half bad. No wonder we were all into this so much. But I was starting to get a little bit older. I guess I was like, I guess I was about the age that you were. I was early teens. And I was looking to upgrade to Fear Street because at this time I've already discovered Poe. I've gotten into like some other stuff. Like I'm ready for the next thing up. And when I'm looking for Fear Street, this is back when people still used libraries. I stumbled upon this book. It was like the selected works of H.P. Lovecraft, except it was just a black book with like this weird purple octopus on it. And I don't know why, but I was like, this looks so cool. So I took it out and I read it and I just bounced between the different stories. And it wasn't like all of his stories, but there was like, it had Call of Cthulhu. It had, a bunch of short stories, stuff like, you had The Tree, The Tomb, like Cool Air, like a bunch of his short stories. So I first one I read was Dagon, because I don't know why, maybe because my name starts with a D and it started with it just like stuck out to me for some reason. I read that, and then I read Call of Cthulhu, and those two stories, like I was like, this is the coolest thing I have ever read in my entire life. When I read the first time I read Call of Cthulhu, it gave me nightmares. You know what I mean? I like put the book down. And I couldn't stop thinking about this idea of this gigantic, like, because it's not just about the Cthulhu coming out of the ocean, right? It's like the psychic aspect of it. He's the Lord of Dreams, the Eater of Dreams, or whatever. And that just like freaked me out so bad. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the whole thing. I think A lot of people, I mean, Cthulhu is so much so in pop culture that he's just like the tentacle guy.
Mm.
Like they displayed him in South Park and such. But the whole thing with Cthulhu is more like what it represents. It's not just the tentacle thing. That's a very superficial look at it. But the way that everyone, well, not even everyone is affected. You know, the sensitive few dreamers that Lovecraft always talks about being altered in horrific ways, the cults, all this thing. It's just, it's kind of even adds to it that not everyone can understand, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You kind of get a sense, like if in Call of Cthulhu, everyone was aware, like, oh, there's Cthulhu on this earth. You know, maybe you think humanity together can do something, but the fact that only a few people are aware sort of adds to the sense of helplessness, which I think is something that is in every Lovecraft story, the sense of helplessness of humanity as a whole.
Mm. Yeah. And when you got it, you were when you stumbled upon Lovecraft, you were kind of already into some horror, right?
Yeah, as I said, I grew up with Goosebumps, as you did. We had also like this other series I cannot remember the name of right now, but yeah, I was always in the library as a kid. I always was drawn to horror. I also read a lot of there was this sort of a cultist guy called Montague Summers, I think his name was, and I had this old compilation that my mom got me of just like the standard stock fare of witches, werewolves, vampires, all this sort of stuff, but all this old literature. So that really affected me as well. And also horror films. I was born in 1987, but growing up in South Africa, our TV was a little bit behind by like 5 years or something. So I grew up watching these dodgy horrors from the 70s and 80s. And this really was always something that was in it. I just loved it. You know, eventually I stopped getting scared by horror. I just got more fascinated the more I got into it. Yeah.
You know, I was born in 87 too. And we got to see the last of the really good organic spooky movies. We really did.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I remember being a kid, and I just recently watched this just because I wanted to watch it. John Carpenter's The Fog. I love those kinds of movies.
Beautiful.
The textures of the celluloid of the picture,
yeah.
the colors, the music, just the whole vibe of those vintage horror movies were special.
Yeah. Carpenter, I mean, he's just amazing to me. I just love all his work. Even the Escape from New York, like this 80s retro vibe, I just love it.
Right.
Yeah, and these old films, I don't know when Hollywood lost it with their cinema regarding Lovecraft. I mean, everyone loves James Wan now because of this Conjuring. I don't get it. Maybe I'm too old or something. I don't know, but this old stuff, I really love it. That's where it is for me. I think now they just sort of, they rely too much on jump scares and not enough on ideas. And that's just, you could have a jump scare with when a little puppy jumps on the screen, you know? All you need is that violin sound and that bang sound, and that's a jump scare. And that's not horror, come on, you know?
So, speaking of film, Lovecraft in film is something that is highly debated, right? Everybody thinks that it's just, you could get into a room full of guys that love Lovecraft and nobody agrees on what the best Lovecraft movie is or the best cosmic horror movie is. If you could name a few, which by the way, I just watched your review of Color Out of Space. I was biting my nails because I unironically actually loved that movie. And like everybody else I knew hated it, except for like some of my, you know, close buddies, at least the second half of the movie. But what do you think, if you could like name a few off the top of your head, what do you think, what movies do you believe captured Lovecraft's concept of cosmicism the best?
For me, the first one is always going to be The Thing.
Mm.
That just nails it. And every sort of sense of the word. The Thing is just, I don't know, that's it. I don't even have to think about it. But apart from that, I also believe Event Horizon was excellent in this regard. I know that it's an old film. I can't spoil it. Come on now. But they say that it's a gate to hell. But, you know, in a lot of the times in Lovecraft's films, the stories, they talk about hell. But that's just like the human understanding. So Event Horizon is excellent in this regard. A bit of an odd one I would recommend as well is actually Phantoms. That was a Dean Kunst book. Kunst, I think that's how you say his name. And then that was with Liev Schreiber and I think Ben Affleck. I mean, on the surface, people might think, what? You recommend this? But a lot of people who I recommend it to, they come back and say, you know, actually, that really works. That one really stands out to me. Obviously, in the. You have that other one that escapes me, In the Mouth of Madness. That was also a John Carpenter one. That's just excellent. There was also one. What was it I watched recently? Europa Report, that really stood out. That was also very excellent, but it wasn't really horror. But in Lovecraft stories, it's not always just horror. There's also the
No.
sense of awe and realization of humans' place in the world. So these ones really stood out to me.
What about, did you see the movie The Void?
Yeah, I did. I actually did a review of that on my channel as well. I think I gave it a 7 out of 10. But I watched this one like right as it came out, so it's not as fresh in my mind. I only watched it one time, but I don't know. It's one of these things where everyone can like a film, but then there's one guy's like, "Eh, it's all right. You know, I'll respect it." But so that was my feeling of it. I respect it. They did cosmic horror very well. It's just, I don't know, maybe just like the setting or something didn't catch it for me, or something like this, yeah.
I do know, and you actually talk about this at length in one of your videos, that you prefer the Lovecraftian stuff to be in the era that Lovecraft described, which was the early 20th century.
Yes.
Why do you say that?
Well, for me, first on a base level, I just like the aesthetic of it. I just think it's cool. But I also think that, as I said in my video, if you have it set then, humanity is sort of very, very proud of itself. We're making all these scientific discoveries. I mean, these great inventions like the Titanic, the unsinkable ship. That was okay. That was 1912, but still in the era. You know, we're just getting into flight. We're discovering radiation was discovered a few decades ago, but still brand new. This type of thing. Yeah, in 1933, they discovered Pluto, which provided Lovecraft the inspiration for The Whisper in Darkness. So humanity's like, yes, okay, yes, we can do it. We're developing the world and we're exploring, you know? And this arrogance of humanity really goes well when, you know, the great old ones sort of knock us down into our place in the food chain, basically. And also the aspect of exploration, you know, exploring the North Pole, the South Pole, parts of the deep ocean, which haven't been explored yet. And you compare it with this day and age now, and I will say that cosmic horror can fit in any time zone technically, but today, I mean, everything's mapped. I mean, you can go on Google Street View on the bloody Amazon there and see everything. So if you get a story set in this day and age, and it's about this cult in the Amazon that's like worshiping this idol, and it's like, no, we know what's in the Amazon. They're not doing that. But back then, maybe it would be have a lot more believability to the readers of the time. So I really think this, combined with the fact of humans being like very proud of themselves and their civilization, and then getting knocked down a bit, I think that's what makes it a good time zone to set it in.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I do think that the concept of cosmic horror can be placed anywhere, but when you do it, probably post, I guess you would say, like post industrial age. Once you get into like digital age, when you get into the 1980s and 90s and 2000s, you almost have to do cosmic horror in kind of a technological way. You can't do it in its old organic way because, as you said, we know what's at the bottom of the sea. We know what the or you have to go like into outer space. Like it doesn't have this the his the world has been demystified. You know what I mean?
And that's also just the sort of feeling about the modernity. I'm not a big fan of modernity.
No.
I don't know. It's just, I don't feel any sort of mystification about the world right now. It's just sort of a dull ache. That's a bit cynical. But yeah, like you can set it in the future, like Event Horizon's excellent cosmic horror. It's set in the future. But it takes that element of human discovery. You know, they discovered something new. but they had to set it in outer space because by that point, you know, on Earth, everything's sort of mapped in high definition, you know. So this is a big thing that I think makes it so. That's you will have to do extra work if you want to set it in the modern day, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I actually saw a short. I love short films, especially like the homemade campy ones, the low budget ones, the ones that are on YouTube. I absolutely love them. And I watched one.
Yeah.
You might have seen it because I know that you're a crazy person like me. I forget exactly what it was called, but it was about this guy who's like a computer programmer, and he finds this Cthulhu code or something like that, and the great old ones start to spread themselves throughout the computer, and it was kind of campy, but I thought the concept was very fresh. I don't know. Have you ever seen this film?
No, but you're definitely going to have to send me this link.
Yeah. It's
I know that's one of the great thing about Lovecraft being in the public domain is that many people can make films about him. And I made like one video of a compilation of just fan films of Lovecraft. And the creativity is really amazing, especially with like zero budget. And I found so many that I need to do a part two and a three. So, yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember off the top of your head maybe what your favorite one was?
I can't remember the name of the film, but it was by a YouTuber called Mike Diva. Diva. He made one, and I put that at number one of my choice in that video that I made. It's basically, okay, I won't spoil, obviously, but it's a guy who's basically locked in a room. That's it. And is covered in padlocks and chains, and everything has a combination lock. So he's basically spending God knows how many years just going through all the combination possibilities, and then finally he gets the door open, and then when it opens, I'll stop talking there. But yeah, it's on Mike Diva's channel, and I want to say it's called Thresher, if I think. But I think it had like a million views or something. So if you just go to his channel, Mike Diva, you'll find it. Yeah.
Did you see there was one that was called like The Sound from Below or something like that? It was a bunch of, I think they were Finnish or some kind of Scandinavian people on a boat, and they were tracking some sound underneath the ocean. I don't know if you saw that one.
No, I haven't.
Yeah, that one. Like, there's so many of these. You know, it's really incredible, you know, how far-reaching Lovecraft's work and his concepts are, but how little recognition he gets from the mainstream. Why do you think that? Because he gets. So this is kind of my thing about Lovecraft is, and this is not just him, but a lot of the pulp authors of their day, the guys that were coming out of Weird Tales and Amazing Stories, and they were lowly dime authors. You know what I mean? They didn't get to sit in the same league as guys like Steinbeck and Hemingway and Fitzgerald. They weren't considered of the same caliber, despite, you know, them, Lovecraft and Howard, crushing them in sales. So I think part of the reason is still this kind of academic snobbery that goes, that comes out of people that presuppose that modern style of, and I don't mean modern as just in like, you know, modern, but like modernity as like an art form. They just presuppose that is like the king stuff, and anything that has any sort of flair of romanticism, which Lovecraft was just completely dripping with, was just low class or behind the times or whatever.
Yeah.
Outside of maybe like this kind of academic ivory tower elitism, what other reasons do you think, or why we don't have any great Lovecraft movies, or why he's not as big of a deal as he is to, like, us?
Well, as for the movies, I just don't think there's enough name recognition. I don't think you're going to get a studio that's going to be willing to shell out $150 million, because the majority of people know Cthulhu, maybe. They'll know him, but they won't know Lovecraft. And that's how things are. I just think that they wouldn't get their returns. And also, I don't think they're going to get copyright, because Lovecraft's public domain. And one thing with movie studios is they certainly like to hang on to their copyrights, don't they? So that might also be an issue for them. They can't legally own it because of the age of how old his stories are. This is a big issue. And also, I just don't think there's a wide enough appeal right now. Horror these days is going in the James Wan territory. I don't know how you feel about him.
No, I actually don't know who he is.
He makes The Conjuring, the Annabelle, all that jump scare rubbish. Yeah, and I think like what you just said about his widespread appeal around the world. He is known around the world, that is for sure. I mean, the amount of people have contacted me. I've had people from Guyana, you know, contact me, Colombia, Brazil, many people in Brazil, Singapore. I mean, there was one guy I found in Syria. The poor guy is getting bombed like hell, and he's still a Lovecraft fan. I just think that's amazing. But the thing is that, like Lovecraft in his story, The Call of Cthulhu, he speaks of the sensitive few, you know, feeling, being affected by Cthulhu's stirrings. I think that's the same with Lovecraftian horror. I just think that a lot of the times it goes a little bit over people's head. I'm not trying to say that to be snobby or anything. I just think a lot of the time they're just like, okay, I don't get it. Like, I do get some comments every now and then on my channel saying like, well, I mean, if there's nothing humanity can do about it, why be afraid, you know, this type of thing. And I just think it goes over a lot of people's head a little bit, and the studios won't get a return. That's why you're going to see low-budget films, if you see any, and why you're never going to see anything really big in projects with regarding Lovecraft.
What do you think about, because there's this kind of this trope that movies and visual mediums can't properly depict Lovecraftian entities or horrors because they are so unfathomable. What do you think about that?
I think it depends on the entity in question. Now, some can be depicted, some cannot. I don't think you're going to have a problem depicting the hybrid ones from the deep, from the Shadow of Innsmouth. That you could do. Color out of space, I mean, the color is literally described as, I think how Lovecraft said it, it was only called color because there was no other way to explain it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there was a German film called Die Farbe, which is just the color in German, and they filmed everything in black and white except the color, which was in color, which in that world, it would make sense. It's abnormal. And then we see Richard Stanley, his adaptation, and he chose magenta because it was the color of like radiation, I think he explained it as. I think you can. I do. I just think it's very, very hard to do. And it's you're really going to have to do this old technique that like they used in Jaws and Alien of barely showing the entity. Mm-hmm. If you're going to go full on, like, here's the entity, oh, it's coming to get you, then you're going to lose a lot. But yeah, like I said, it depends on how you're depicting it. For example, there was one great depiction of Cthulhu. There was the game, The Call of Cthulhu, the recent one, I think, I can't remember when it came out. But at the end, Cthulhu does appear, but it's in the shadows. You get this sort of hint of movement, and then there's a lightning flash. And then you just see a little bit more clearly there, the entity, but never in full force. And I think that is a big thing. And it's just, yeah, the literature is always going to be better, but I don't think it's impossible.
Yeah, one thing that I see in like paintings, it's really hard. Is Cthulhu specifically is really hard to depict him because of scale, right? He's supposed to be the biggest thing that you can imagine. Like he could stand in the Marianas Trench and stand up, right?
Yeah,
that's just an unfathomable scale, and to properly depict that is tough.
Yeah, that is. I mean, I remember the exact quote from the story. A mountain walked or stumbled. God, that's the quote of Johansson when he described seeing Cthulhu. And yeah, the scale is also, I think, part of the sense of cosmic horror. It's a good visual way of making you realize how puny you are as a human.
Mm-hmm.
But depicting it, I mean, I guess if you want to get it all analytical, you could say that Cthulhu had his head split open, or its head split open, by a steamboat. So you know how big steamboats are in general, so you could calculate. But yeah, you also have to realize that Cthulhu is not really of this world, so maybe the shape shifts, maybe just like how disorientated the people on Arlia were, the sailors, that they saw things which weren't there. Maybe we misjudge his size, just because, I mean, it's like if you see something and it's like becomes so blurry and shaking and seeing double, maybe this is the effect Cthulhu has on us, which is,
yeah,
it might be the way. I don't know. That's just my guess.
So, you do a lot of content that goes like a deep dive into the mythos itself. I'm
yes.
not, I read the stories. Like if you bring up, you say, you know about, Nyarlathotep, I'll be, yeah, I know about Nyarlathotep. You know, I mean, I read that story,
yep.
But I'm not the kind of guy that can just like do like a talk on the mythos outside
yep.
of Cthulhu. Cause I know Cthulhu has like a father and there's like a whole, like almost like lineage to the mythos. What other entities in the mythos that might not get as much attention do you think that people should go check out, or maybe your personal favorites?
I'm always drawn to the sea-based entities just out of personal pleasure, because I grew up in a harbor and I remember that fishy smell that Lovecraft always complained about. He hated fish, as do I. but as far as entities go, Azathoth always, that's like the be all and the end all. That is the final entity that's basically in the mythos. That's the creator of literally everything.
Mm.
So this is the entity which I think doesn't really get that much focus on. It's probably because Cthulhu is sort of easy to imagine. It's a tentacle guy, right? Mm. But Azathoth is more, a lot more abstract. So this is definitely one. And also, I think like the ones coming from some of the other authors that Lovecraft co-opted, like Tsathoggwa from Clark Ashton Smith. I like these side entities as well. They're a little bit more fun, a little bit more easy to comprehend than things like Yog-Sothoth and Azathoth. Because, I mean, it's just, if you can comprehend it, you can make a little bit more of a story explaining things. But, I mean, if it's inexplicable, then yeah, the story kind of chokes there a little bit. But I just also wanted to say that I know that there's if you go on like the wiki and then you see the whole lineage, like Cthulhu has the mother of this one and the father of this one. This was not really coming from Lovecraft at all. Mm. He never set out there to set up a whole canon, internal logic and things like Tolkien, or, you know, like things like this. He never intended to do this. And this is more coming from secondary authors. Donald Wandrei, I think he did a lot of it, August Derleth, and in the future authors as well. I don't think it's bad, but I just prefer Lovecraft's way of saying that each story speaks for itself.
Yeah. And I'm also a fan, like I love stories, what was that, The Alchemist. I love stories like that. What's the other one? Horror of the Mound, right?
Yep.
It's got some Native
Mound,
American stuff in there. No, Horror of the Mound was Robert E. Howard's horror short. The Mound. And I think that there's a lot of stuff that Lovecraft did that wasn't necessarily cosmic horror, but was still excellent. Are there any stories like this that come off the top of your head that you would suggest?
He had a bit of a sense of humor too, the old gentleman there. There's this one called Winged Death. You can find that in a The Horror in the Museum is the title of the book. It's this little orange book. I always plug it on my channel. But yeah, Winged Death is actually set in South Africa. So maybe Lovecraft's had some inspiration for my country of origin. It's basically about the soul being trapped into a fly and all this sort of thing. It's more your stock standard horror. He did co-write it, so maybe this explains it. I found that very amusing. But when it comes to these other stories which are not so cosmic horror, like people always tell me to read the dream stories, but they aren't really for me, to be honest. Mm-hmm. But Winged Death, that's the one that comes to mind immediately.
So you sound like the kind of guy that just really loves the source material. And you might appreciate kind of the later stuff or some of the stuff that is coming out in the tradition, but you haven't really fallen in love with any of it yet. Would you say that's accurate?
No, that's accurate, yeah.
What do you think that a lot of the later cosmic horror works are missing that Lovecraft nailed?
I guess I'm just used to old use of English language. As I said, I had these old anthologies of old horror. This is coming back from like the 19th century and such, so I just grew up with this. So maybe that's my just biased subjective reasoning. I find a lot of the times there are too many pastiches, you know, and pastiche is fine. It's just like a noble tradition, you know, like doing a cover song or something. But I just find that too many times when you buy like an anthology on Amazon or such, it tends to just be riffing off the most basic elements of Lovecraft. Oh, the tentacles, you know, oh, the tentacles, watch out. Indescribable. They play too much into the memes a little bit of Lovecraft. That's not all. There are some new anthologies which are good, modern writers which write in Lovecraftian style. But I don't know. This is my personal bias. And also, I just love old media, you know, old films, old literature. There's just so much to read. So when I have time to read, I'm going to go for the older stuff first. I want to get through that first before I go to the new stuff. So maybe I'm being a bit harsh on the new writers. Nothing personal. It's just I'm trapped in the old world. I'm trapped 100 years ago.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, I'm starting to come into some of the newer stuff through the indies. Yeah. There are quite a few indie authors out there that I really, really love, especially some of the guys at Bizarre Archives have just blown me away. But I was like that for forever. Like I didn't even want to read the Ace Books versions of Conan. Like I just wanted to read the stuff that's out of Weird Tales. I love that really kind of gnawing, eccentric purple prose that had that kind of pulp romantic feel to it. That was kind of dancey,
with
the alliteration and the poeticism, and I just loved it. It was beautiful. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's exactly my feeling as well. I just love the old type of style of writing. I just really do. That's it.
Yeah. And speaking of writing, you have you are an aspiring writer yourself.
Yeah. Just like any metalhead picks up a guitar to try their hand, so it is with me. I do write. I wouldn't say I'm brilliant, but I would say that I have some skill with English. I did go to an English grammar school and took English as a minor in a university. I think I have about 4 stories which I could say, this is decent. And then I got a bunch of other rough ideas which are going. But you know, I'm kind of my own worst critic, but I hope one day I can be sending you a couple and maybe I'll get published.
Oh yeah, I look forward to it. Do you so you haven't pursued being published quite yet?
No. Whenever I have free time, I'm dedicating it to the channel, and I don't want to make the channel about me, which is kind of why I never really show my face there or talk about my projects or such. I'm talking about Lovecraft and trying to get people into him, which is why I made such a video as the introduction to Lovecraft. But one day, this year I made a vow. This year is the time when I publish these 4. So I'm just in the case of now polishing them up, seeing I don't have any internal plot holes or things like this. And then, then I will make it public, yeah.
Do you, how would you like to, tell us a little bit about maybe your favorite story that you wrote?
Favorite story I wrote was, I would say, well, I'm really in love with these sea stories. So I kind of made like a sequel to Dagon in my own sort of way. It's about this character who discovers basically a washed up corpse, right? Who has the heart carved out. The human heart is not there. It's sort of like this altered, we know it now as a deep one heart. But then he starts to read the backstory of this character who got washed up on the beach. It enters the local news where in the small little town, and then he learns about how this character discovered that deep ones exist and all this, and the exchange he went, cutting out his human heart, putting a deep one heart, and then things like this. And then I also had one based on a dream, basically. I don't know if it's any good, but I just woke up thinking, wow, this dream is so vivid. I wrote it down. Basically, it involves this destructive force, which is unnameable, taking over town after town in a small German village, kind of based on Switzerland where I'm living. And then the character deciding that he has no kinship with the people around him, decides to actually find out what the hell is actually destroying these towns, and then he confronts it, and then is faced with a decision. Yeah,
that sounds great. And yeah, what length are these stories run? Are these short stories? Are these like novellas or?
No, short stories. I'm aiming for about the 5,000 word is a sweet spot, I think.
Yeah.
Give or take. Like I said, I need to edit them down a little bit and also check for internal inconsistencies, so this could fluctuate a bit, but I'd say on average I always think that to begin with, like Lovecraft began with Dagon and these outsider stories, that's the type of length I'm aiming for before I get too cocky and go for a novella length thing.
Mm-hmm.
yeah
you know, there's a bit of a bias among authors that you have to, until you write a full-length novel, you're not a real author. And I just push back against that because, you know, Lovecraft is probably my favorite. If he's not my favorite, he's in my top three. And he never wrote a full-length novel. All of his stuff was short form. He just wrote it all in that format. So I think that shorter format is a really good format to go forward into, because we are approaching a time that is very much like the circumstances the people had during the time of the pulp era, which was like the Great Depression and the Dust Bowl and you know, everything that was going on here in the States. I don't know what was going on in South Africa at that time. We kind of have this meme over here, at least in some circles, that like before the 80s, South Africa was like a paradise. You know what I mean? But we had some pretty tough times over here in that era, and we're getting into a time that's not the same to that, but it's get people work ridiculous hours. People are less, they're not as interested in the mainstream stuff anymore. People don't have the same reading capacity, the same time, the same money. They're just, you know what I mean? The working class don't really have that kind of time or attention span to crack open a 800-page novel like that, or 150,000-word novel. They want to read something short and punchy, and I think that short fiction is the way to go.
Absolutely, yeah. I did read some articles that the attention span of people has just really dropped, and I'm ashamed to admit it's the same for me a little bit. You know, we always got the smartphones and stuff. We're getting bombarded with information. Mm-hmm. Even if you put down the smartphone, you go out, you just see the adverts everywhere, screens, even in the trams and buses over here, we have the trains, you know, there's just always screens, information everywhere. And this does affect us. And I think that, I mean, I do read longer literature as well, novels and such. But I don't know, I just find that the pulp fiction and the short fiction, it's just for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like one would say, you know, classic rock is for me, or jazz is for me. You know, it's just that's for me.
Yeah. I would say the same thing. I have novels. I've read novels. I've listened to novels on audiobook that I absolutely adored. Dune being one of them. You know, so it's not that I'm against it, but it's kind of a marketing idea that I have that I think is and that's kind of the idea we have with the Bizarchives is to put something out that's a little shorter, more accessible, a little bit more based on experience, and that people can read in an hour. They go through 3, 4, 5 different settings and just like have fun with it. And it's a little more casual. So that's just the way that I see it. And I think it's a good idea, especially if you're just getting started as a writer. I think that you should cut your teeth on short stories because short stories are like... every word counts. Every word counts. The ending is everything. And if you don't nail it, then it's not a good story. You don't have any sort of safety nets.
Yeah, that's exactly the case. I think with a lot of artistic pursuits, which are deemed easy, it's easy. Anyone can do it. But that means it takes something special to stand out, which is why there are a lot of writers who write these. Like, I have some modern anthologies here. Black Wings of Cthulhu, I think, is one by S.G. Joshi. It's like a series. Mm. And it's just like some of them are just so silly, you know. So I think, yeah, it really does take a bit of effort to really pop. And because you are limited, you have to really work with what you have. You know, it's like limitation breeds creativity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
So you said a few of the stories are silly. What do you, why are they silly?
I read this one called, oh man, this is wild. I don't waste my time reading this fiction, but it was called like Calamari Rings or something. And then it involved like a deep one doing like a 9/11 style jihad or something. And just like the language, it was just so like, it didn't get into that sort of lefty territory, which is very popular these days with modern Lovecraft writers. It was just so silly. And look, I don't mind having a little bit of fun with a mythos. I mean, I you have to laugh at yourself sometimes. Don't be too serious all the time. But if you're going to publish in a book, make some effort, you know. And this just really popped up, just being so silly. There's a few others. I can't really remember them off the top of my head. Like, I just stopped reading. I learned years ago which ones to, which type of books to avoid and which ones to read.
So you just mentioned about the lefty nonsense, and this is something that especially in your recent videos, you've been just like eviscerating these guys about this. What makes you think that, like, what attracts these people? Because it's kind of like split. If you go into a Lovecraft, like, let's say Facebook group or something, it's split right down the middle. You have and there it's just like a constant war over it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? What makes you think that, because it's just bizarre to me that this attracts them at all. Lovecraft's like super based, like political views.
Yeah.
And then just the nature of his stories and what they put forth are just completely incompatible with like these leftoid mutants, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, what do you think attracts them? Why do they think they have a place here?
Lovecraft's in the popular culture, one way or another, ever since the 80s with the invention of this role-playing game by Sandy Peterson. He's been in the pop culture. And the left, frankly, they control pop culture now. They're all producing it. The Star Wars, Lord of the Rings now with that tragedy, that's what's happening, you know too well. I think they go after him because of his views of society. It goes completely against theirs. As you say, he's kind of based, huh? And so what they like to do is take something that is established and twist it, you know, subvert our expectations, they always like to say. You know, this is what they want to do always. And I think that they do it because they can get away with it. Like, I've spoken to other people who publish their own stories, and they've just been shot down by so many publication houses or platforms for not being, you know, the progressive line, which is popular these days. I think they want to do it, A, because they don't like anything not wrapped up in their grasp. They like to control popular culture. And B, they just want to stick it to Lovecraft, because many times I've read these articles, they smugly say, our stories are making that racist spin in his grave and things like this.
Wow.
So that's my reasoning for why they want to do it. Yeah,
that's disgusting.
You know? No, it truly is. I mean, and the depths that they go to, you know, if they wanted to make, I will never tell anyone, hey, you cannot write that. I'm not canceling anyone, right? But they just completely miss the point. They cannot create cosmic horror because inevitably they turn societal issues into the cosmic horror, as with Lovecraft Country. that turned racism into it's a cosmic horror for non-whites. Come on, blow me with that. I mean, it's horrible. Mm-hmm. And then this worst one, this is the worst. This is Ruthanna Emery's character there, where she co-opts the shadow of Innsmouth, which is my favorite story. Makes the deep ones the victims, you know, persecuted like the Japanese in the Second World War in America. She makes them the victims that are, you know, wrongly pursued and all this. I'm like, hello, did you read the story? Did you realize that the deep ones wanted to bring up Shoggoths into the world of humans, these literal killing machines which will wipe out humanity? They wanted to bring up them into our world, and you're going to make them the good guys? I mean, come on. You know, so if they made a cosmic horror with their spin, but it was cosmic horror, okay, salute, peace, whatever. But I mean, they're just so incompetent, and that just really bugs me.
Yeah, I saw one. It was an adaptation. I didn't watch it. You might actually brought it up in one of your videos. Mm. It wasn't you. It was somebody else that was talking about the best Lovecraft movies and like the worst, or I can't remember what it was. But it was apparently there was like a Shadow over Innsmouth adaptation. And all of the hybrids that were living in the town were like these like rednecks that were being mean to the main character who was gay, and that was like the big
The film is called Cthulhu. Actually, I don't know why that even shows they're not paying attention. Yeah, it's basically a loose, as you said, an adaptation of Shadow of Innsmouth, but it's rednecks and the guy's gay. They called it Cthulhu. Yeah, it's I didn't watch it. I just don't waste time watching bad media. It's just not for me. It's designed for other people. Let them enjoy it. It's not for me.
I just saw that, and it just blew my mind that somebody somewhere thought it was a good idea to make this heaving piece of crap.
Yeah, I mean, but that's what's popular these days, right? I don't even think it sells that much, but that's what's getting you funded by Hollywood, isn't it? That's how you get your money. You pitch it, you throw in some diverse rainbow people and whatnot, and then bingo, there's your paycheck to make your film.
So, you know, speaking of that, some of your content is pretty edgy. You know what I mean? Like, it's not vulgar or like it's not crazy, but you know what I mean? Like, guys that watch my show are gonna know you slip in some pretty base stuff there. So, have you experienced like any backlash from the hate mob or anything like that?
Actually not. And this is something I'm very proud about on my channel. I can count on one hand the amount of times I've gotten emails or comments saying, oh, you're a bigot, you're horrible, you're this ist, you're that ist. But the majority, and I have 15,000 subs now. If you look at the like, okay, YouTube took away the dislikes, but I can swear to you, it's very rare that I get a below 95% like rate ratio. So no, I never really experienced this. Even when I make videos like that one about the leftists, how they cannot touch the mythos, it still never drops down between below 95% like rate. And I think I don't know why they avoid me. But yeah, I think it's a very positive, healthy sign that people out there are just sick of this rubbish. And they want good Pulp Fiction. So this is why I was so happy to plug the Bizarre Archives.
Mm-hmm. And thank you so much for that. We actually, the day that you plugged it, the subsequent days, we actually like had some really good sales. So your fans like really showed up to support the Bizarre Archives. And I'm very glad. Yeah, it was really good stuff. But you know, we're the kind of the same way. We're a little edgy. You know what I mean? Like the Bizarre Archives is not about. I mean, obviously we all have political opinions. I have political opinions. I talk about them. I put them on my Telegram, and sometimes I get pretty edgy. The Bizarre Archives isn't about that. It's about preserving the tradition, the literary tradition. You know what I mean? So it's like, but we're unapologetic in that we don't want these weirdos. I said very early on, we publish weird fiction, not weird authors. Yep. If you send us a submission and you got pronouns in your shit, I'm going to reject it right away. I don't even want you. You know what I mean?
No, that's absolutely right. And when I published I put on the screen your mission statement for Bizarre Archives, I got a few comments there in that video really praising it. Like they were very happy to see that type of thing written. yeah, people are just tired of it, and you really are nailing a good market there. And
Exactly.
the pronouns in the bio, these types, yeah, you do see the Lovecraft community, I guess, kind of split. There's this Ask Lovecraft guy, and I was always a bit weary about his comedy, and then I checked out his Twitter, and that was the first thing listed. That was just just irritating to see. Yeah, you know him, right? The Ask Lovecraft
No,
guy.
I don't know who that is.
No, he's some. I mean, he goes to these events like Necronomicon in Providence and the film festival. If you want a nightmare, you go to the HP Lovecraft Film Festival homepage. Jesus, it is. I'm gonna make a video about that a bit later. I'll try have to try and calm down my temper though. But
What? What's wrong with it?
well, the first thing you see when you click on the page is a big sign that says Black Lives Matter,
Oh my God.
and then you scroll down, and then you see their mission statement about inclusion, diversity, yada yada yada. And then you also see the part where people of color do not have to pay the entry fee. So they take fan films, right? But if you're a white man, you have to pay to have your admission fee, right? But if you're a BIPOC, you don't have to pay a cent.
What is, I don't even know what a BIPOC is. I see them say it. Do you know what that means?
Yeah, it's biracial indigenous person of color. No, black indigenous person of color. That's what BIPOC means. And the thing that always makes me laugh about that, indigenous. I'm indigenous to Europe. Okay, I was born in South Africa. Maybe I'm a bad example, but indigenous can also mean white, but they don't include them in the BIPOC thing, I'll tell you that. And I just think that's that the whole film festival website, they would charge Lovecraft to submit a film to his own fandom. And they think they have the moral high ground. It's very comical.
Is that, do they get a lot of fanfare? Are they popular at all, or is that like a flop?
Yeah, well, I mean, when it comes to fandom, there's a bunch of there's the Necronomicon event, then you have the H.P. Lovecraft Historical Society, and then you have the H.P. Lovecraft Film Festival, and they're all sort of like in the same buddies. They're all buddies, basically. They all promote each other's material and publications and such. They basically, yeah, it's a film festival. That's it. And then they have it like yearly. I think it's in Portland, Oregon.
Ugh.
I'm not even from America. I know about Portland, Oregon. Okay, so just
I've never
saying, that
been
tells
there,
you a lot.
but I know what it
Yeah,
is.
So yeah, they are all in the same bed together. But I'm not going to throw them all under the same bus. I mean, the H.P. Lovecraft Historical Society, they make some fun media. I'm not going to go after them for that. And hey, I mean. Yeah, I'm not like the person who says, "Oh, we all have to have the same political beliefs." I just like things to be apolitical because I'm just sick of everything being political. Yeah. So if they want to cozy up with the film society, whatever, as long as they keep their stuff neutral. Yeah.
I that's obviously when I write a story, I it reflects my worldview because that's just how I envision these fantasy
Yeah.
worlds, right?
That's normal, yeah.
But I believe very deeply that propaganda is the death of art. Once your art becomes propaganda, it's no longer art. And when it's no longer
Yeah.
art, it's no longer immersive. And when
Yeah.
it's no longer immersive, it no longer has value. That's the kind of the way that I look at it. But
Yeah.
Mr. Damien, this was one of the fastest hours I've ever had on an interview. I could go a whole other hour with you, but unfortunately we got to shut it down. Do you have anything in conclusion you'd like to say?
I would just like to say that I have my full support with you guys. I
Thank
truly
you.
believe in your mission statement, and I believe that everyone could get behind you. That would really be the way to go. And this is really something that could be the next Weird Tales. And yeah, anything you need in the future, I will be fully be supporting of you.
No, I appreciate you. Thank you so
Yeah.
much. And thanks for coming on. It's a great conversation, everybody. If you're not subbed, if you're a Lovecraft fan and you're not subbed to the Arkham Reporter, which you probably already are, but if you're not, you gotta go sub. Damien does such great content. He has his knowledge of the mythos and everything is off the charts. he's looking at, we were talking about movies. He goes into talking about movies. He goes into talking about the video games that are Lovecraft. He goes into talking about kind of exterior, greater mythos things. So if you are a Lovecraft crazy person, his channel is one of the best. It's, you know, my personal favorite of that genre. So absolutely go type it in, The Arkham Reporter, and go subscribe to him. Great stuff. But we're going to shut it down for this evening. If you like The Bog, you support The Bog, make sure you go to patreon.com/The Bog and sign up. There's a tier for everybody. $5 all the way up to $50. You can get a sticker. You can get a mug. But most importantly, you get the RSS feed to listen to the audio of every single show that we do, to listen to in your car, on your commutes, at work, or at the gym. That is patreon.com/The Bog. You want to support The Bog another way to help us keep the lights on, go over to shop.spreadshirt.com/bogshop and get yourself some sweet merch, man. We got hoodies. We got beanies. If you're on the East Coast like me, or if you're in some cold place like Switzerland and you need something to keep you warm, go get yourself a sweet Bog hoodie. We got dresses for the ladies, onesies for the babies. Go check that stuff out. If you want to support a friend of ours, make sure to check out our boy Neil John at facebook.com/IronAgeJodish for some authentic, ancient, Vedic astrology. Very, very cool stuff. Go give him a like. If you like what he's doing, you decide to get a reading, tell him that Big Dave sent you over there. facebook.com/IronAgeJodish. And finally, guys, I've been working like a damn dog on this thing. All the Bizarre Archives crew has been working like a dog. You, man, so much love. And like, I really, really appreciate you guys. All the Bizarre Kangs out there have been buying up the Bizarre Archives. We're crushing it. We're blossoming. We're really doing good stuff. I'm telling you, hundreds of copies in, and we're probably in over 20 countries now. It's really, really doing well. And I know you guys are going to like it. Go support, and not just the Bizarre Archives, support indie publishing, man. There's so many great indie pulps out there. Go support the whole thing. Let's breathe life back into this beautiful Western literary tradition of pulp fiction. If you want to get yourself a copy of the Bizarre Archives 1 or 2, or a cosmic horror double feature by A. Cuthbertson, which is a very, very cool a double feature of novellas about, I'm not going to spoil anything, but they're cosmic horror stories, and they're really fresh and unique, and really, really great stuff. And the Mr. Cuthbertson is an Englishman, so they have this nice English flavor. Great, great stories. You guys are going to love them. They're just beyond weird. Super weird. You're going to love them. So go to thebizarrearchives.com and get yourself a copy. And like always, we got to raise a horn to our most exalted patrons, our very own Andre and Mr. Corey. Hail to them, and hail to each and every one of you guys out there that have supported The Bog all these years and supported me all these years. Much love, many blessings. Also, hail to each and every one of you. We got some holidays coming up, and we're going to be talking about that. We got so much more lined up. I'm going to have the full panel back next week. I think we're going to talk about carnivore diet. So we're going to get on, we're going to talk about carnivore diet and what that means to a heathen. And we're going to talk about holy diets and ancestral diets. We're going to talk about diet all over the place. So tune in next week, 6 p.m. Eastern. I'll see you guys then. Hails and many blessings.